Imagine waking up one day and realizing that all the rules about career progression, mastery, and success are just artificial constructs, barriers that only exist because we believe in them. This is precisely what James Altucher discovered after multiple career pivots, spectacular failures, and remarkable comebacks. Skip the line has become a cultural phenomenon, resonating with millions feeling trapped by traditional career paths, especially following the pandemic's disruption of work norms. The book has been endorsed by productivity guru Tim Ferriss and business magnate Mark Cuban, who called it the new blueprint for career and life success. Its counterintuitive approach to mastery has made it required reading at forward-thinking companies like Shopify and Stripe, where innovation depends on rapid skill acquisition rather than decades of experience. The 10,000-hour rule, popularized by Malcolm Gladwell, suggests that mastery requires approximately 10,000 hours of deliberate practice. But what if you don't have that kind of time? What if you need to change careers now, feed your family now, or pursue your passion now? Altucher proposes a revolutionary alternative, the 10,000 experiments rule. Rather than spending years practicing the same skills in the same way, conduct rapid experiments that yield immediate feedback. This approach acknowledges that the fastest path to mastery isn't a straight line, but a series of intelligent detours that bypass unnecessary effort. Consider Tracy Morgan's approach to comedy. While other comedians meticulously crafted and rehearsed their sets, Morgan experimented with raw, unfiltered performance that connected directly with audiences. When Altucher performed at the same club, he deliberately chose to go on after Morgan, an uncomfortable slot most comedians would avoid as an experiment in handling a difficult situation. Good experiments share key characteristics. They're easy to set up, carry little downside risk, offer huge potential upside, involve something never done before, at least by you, and teach you something regardless of outcome. There is no failure, only learning or success. When a friend wanted to create uniquely tie-dyed Made in America clothing, Altucher suggested experiments. Either make prototypes in China to test on Etsy, or create Facebook ads with Photoshopped products to gauge interest. These experiments could determine in a single afternoon whether her idea had potential, saving 6 months of work. The power of experimentation extends across domains. Andy Warhol began as a photorealistic commercial illustrator before experimenting with techniques like mirror printing and comic frames. His famous Campbell's soup can paintings, an idea he bought from a friend for $50, launched pop art and recently sold for $11.7 million. Edison needed 9,000 experiments for one working invention. Picasso painted over 50,000 paintings. Richard Branson started more than 300 companies. The key is being prolific and viewing each experiment as a stepping stone rather than a final destination. What happens if you improve just 1% each day? Through the magic of compounding, in 1 year, you'll be 37.78 times better. That's 3,800% improvement. This works through compounding. Day one, you're at $1.01. Day two, at $1.02, and so on. While the daily changes seem microscopic, the long-term impact is revolutionary. This same principle applies whether you're learning a language, mastering a sport, or building a business. Consider real-world applications. A salesperson who learns one new closing technique each week, a programmer who masters one new function daily, or an artist who experiments with one new technique per session. These small improvements stack up dramatically over time. For instance, a writer who increases their daily word count by just 50 words each week will write an additional 130,000 words per year, equivalent to 2 novels. If you want to get better at cooking, you might learn scrambled eggs one day, baking fish the next, then experimenting with sauces. Each small skill builds upon the last. Mastering temperature control while making eggs helps when searing meat. Understanding spice combinations with fish transfers to vegetable dishes. Eventually, you might develop something unique like Sushiritos. Share your results online and tap into the hive mind of collaboration. Being the only is often more important than being better. Careers are made by bringing new ideas to ancient crafts. Think of Roy Choi combining Korean barbecue with Mexican tacos, or Dominique Ancel creating the cronut. But you can also lose 1% a day through neglect or poor habits. If you decrease in knowledge daily, by year's end, you'll have only 3% of the knowledge you started with. This decay is evident in unused language skills, abandoned musical instruments, or neglected professional certifications. People who don't focus on improvement will be outpaced by others who maintain consistent growth. Every day matters in this compound effect. Your decisions about how you spend each day sneak up until they define you. A daily 30-minute practice session might seem insignificant, but it amounts to 182.5 hours per year, equivalent to more than 4 full work weeks of focused improvement. This is why daily practice is so critical. It's not about dramatic transformations, but consistent, incremental progress that compounds over time. Whether it's reading 10 pages daily, practicing an instrument for 20 minutes, or learning one new industry trend, these small actions accumulate into expertise. The key is to make improvement habitual rather than occasional. Track your progress, celebrate small wins, and remember that consistency trumps intensity. Even on days when you can only manage a minimal effort, maintaining the habit preserves your compound growth trajectory. Maria Konnikova, a psychology PhD and Sherlock Holmes enthusiast, successfully skipped the line in professional poker by borrowing hours from her previous expertise. Despite starting as a complete beginner, within a year she won up to $250,000 in tournaments against professionals with decades of experience. Her rapid ascent demonstrates how expertise in one domain can accelerate mastery in another when core skills overlap. Her psychology background provided multiple advantages in poker: deep understanding of human behavior patterns, ability to detect subtle emotional cues, and expertise in decision-making under pressure. Her PhD research experience contributed essential skills, including statistical analysis, pattern recognition, and the discipline required for intensive study. Most importantly, her scientific training taught her to maintain emotional detachment while analyzing complex situations, a crucial skill at the poker table. Similarly, her coach, Eric Seidel, borrowed hours from being a world backgammon champion, applying overlapping skills to poker. His backgammon expertise provided mastery of probability calculations, strategic thinking, and position play. The psychological aspects transferred directly, reading opponents' tendencies, managing bankroll across tournaments, and maintaining composure during high-stakes moments. This cross-pollination of skills helped him become an 8-time World Series of Poker bracelet winner. Pelé, widely considered the greatest soccer player in history, skipped the line by borrowing hours from playing futsal, a Brazilian indoor sport played on a smaller court with a heavier ball. Futsal's confined spaces forced him to develop exceptional ball control, quick decision-making, and precise passing abilities. The sport's emphasis on close control and rapid movements translated perfectly to soccer, giving him extraordinary technical skills. Playing barefoot on hard streets also enhanced his touch sensitivity and balance, making his transition to grass fields with shoes feel effortless. The key to borrowing hours effectively lies in careful analysis of skill overlap between domains. Success requires identifying not just surface-level similarities, but deep structural connections between different fields. For example, a chess master might excel in corporate strategy by applying similar skills in pattern recognition and forward planning. A musician might become an excellent language learner by leveraging their trained ear for subtle sound differences and rhythmic patterns. The most powerful transfers often come from unexpected connections, like how military leadership training can enhance classroom teaching abilities through shared skills in group motivation and clear communication. This approach to skill development can create significant advantages when entering new fields, allowing practitioners to progress much faster than those starting from zero. The key is to consciously analyze and adapt existing expertise rather than assuming skills will transfer automatically. There's no single skill called business or entrepreneurship. Any skill worth mastering is actually a collection of micro skills that must be individually developed. These micro skills are the fundamental building blocks that, when mastered together, create expertise in a field. To truly excel, you must identify and systematically improve these component skills through deliberate practice and experimentation. Despite early success as an entrepreneur, Altucher was severely lacking in crucial business micro skills. While good at sales, idea creation, and execution thanks to borrowed programming experience, he failed at management, business valuation, and follow-up. He didn't understand that service businesses, where assets walk out the door every night, are worth less than product businesses, where you make money while you sleep. This ignorance cost him millions when he built software similar to WordPress but used it only for service work valued at $250,000. His experience illustrates how missing even a few critical micro skills can undermine otherwise promising ventures. Every field breaks down into component micro skills. Writing involves storytelling, language play, genre understanding, and marketing. Chess requires knowledge of openings, middle games, end games, and tactics. Comedy demands humor, stage presence, crowd work, and professional networking. Even seemingly simple skills like public speaking break down into voice modulation, body language, content structure, audience engagement, and timing. Photography involves composition, lighting, equipment knowledge, post-processing, and client management. For any interest, list at least 10 micro skills needed for success, including both technical skills, like drawing for artists, and tribal skills, networking, communication. Then design experiments to learn those skills, whether it's writing your first hello program or creating a menu of crazy dishes and inviting friends to order from it. For example, an aspiring restaurateur might practice menu planning, cost analysis, inventory management, staff scheduling, and customer service separately before attempting to run a full establishment. You master micro skills by borrowing from related skills and designing experiments that combine doing with learning. A musician learning improvisation might start with scale patterns, then add rhythm variations before incorporating emotional expression. You can only excel at things you're obsessed with. The person who studies history, tries new ideas, seeks the best trainers, and analyzes the masters will outperform everyone else. This obsession drives the dedication needed to master each component skill thoroughly rather than settling for surface-level competence. Success comes from recognizing that expertise isn't a single achievement, but rather the culmination of mastering numerous, smaller, interconnected skills. By breaking down complex abilities into their constituent parts, you can create a structured approach to learning and improvement, focusing on one micro skill at a time while understanding how they fit together in the larger picture. Frank Shamrock, considered pound for pound the greatest UFC fighter of all time, shares his secret for becoming the best at anything. Plus, minus, equals. The plus represents mentors. People who are better than you from whom you can learn. Frank had his adopted father Bob Shamrock and brother Ken as mentors. If you lack direct mentors, find virtual ones through books and other resources, as Altucher did with Warren Buffett when learning investing. When seeking mentors, don't ask, "What do you need?" This gives them unwanted homework. Instead, overpromise and overdeliver, as Altucher did with his college professor, taking detailed notes and rewriting them in his voice for a potential book. Reading is the ultimate superpower. It lets you absorb 30 years of someone's knowledge in a single book, turning authors into virtual mentors who will never resent your success. Your minus is someone with fewer skills than you that you can teach. Einstein said, "If you can't explain something simply, then you don't understand it." teaching forces you to truly master fundamentals. Chess champion Jose Capablanca wrote a basic chess book immediately after becoming world champion, understanding that mastery requires constant return to fundamentals. Frank Shamrock trained top MMA fighters, becoming a true master when he could teach the next generation. Your equals are peers at your same skill level with whom you compete, challenge, and learn from. Frank Shamrock fought, trained, and traded notes with his equals as they all rose together in the MMA world. Throughout history, scenes of equals have driven innovation. The Homebrew Computer Club brought together Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak, and Bill Gates. The Beat Writers formed another scene with Ginsberg, Kerouac, and Burroughs. Nobody reaches the top 1% alone. You need a scene of equals who push you forward, even as they become your competitors. Your equals help you measure your progress in the hierarchy of whatever you're trying to learn. In high-stakes situations, one person controls the frame while others don't. As a comedian on stage, lawyer in court, or even in dating scenarios, losing the frame means losing control of the outcome. A validation vacuum occurs when someone who regularly validates you suddenly stops. This creates emotions ranging from anger to sadness that diminish your frame. When experiencing this vacuum, you'll question yourself and may make arguments against your own interests. You can determine who holds the frame by asking yourself, how many things are you doing to appease the other person? How far are you willing to go to appease them? When operating in someone else's frame, you may feel strong impulses to continue actions that aren't beneficial for you. Since we typically qualify ourselves to superiors, getting others to qualify themselves to you establishes you as the authority. Ask subtle questions that prompt them to explain their expertise and credentials. When they answer, deliberately underreact, making them work harder to impress you. People unconsciously adopt qualities you attribute to them, a technique called shaping. If someone seems anxious at a party, praising their calm demeanor will actually make them calmer. This works both ways. Strengthen allies by acknowledging positive traits and destabilize opponents by pointing out negative ones. Finding common ground with others creates an instant tribe, transforming you from outsider to insider. This works with meaningful or trivial commonalities, shared experiences with weather, commuting troubles, or professional challenges. When someone ignores your question or changes the subject, they're creating a validation vacuum to control the frame. Reclaim power by directly labeling their behavior. Did you just change the subject? How come? Or are you not answering the question for a reason? Ironically, saying no to opportunities, even good ones, is essential for an extraordinary life. This requires self-respect and self-authority. Prepare your boundaries in advance for every conversation. A helpful guideline? Ask yourself, if I say yes to this, will I learn something new? The modern workplace harbors a startling truth. The average worker is productive for only 2 hours 53 minutes per day, with the remaining hours lost to digital distractions, unnecessary meetings, and workplace socializing. Studies show that employees spend an average of 1.5 hours on news sites, 44 minutes on social media, 26 minutes job searching, and 1.6 hours engaging in non-work conversations. In corporate environments, this inefficiency is compounded by a compensation structure that typically returns only 5 to 15% of the value created to the employee, while the remainder flows to shareholders and upper management. The Pareto Principle, also known as the 80-20 rule, provides a framework for understanding and optimizing this productivity challenge. This principle manifests across diverse domains. 20% of customers generate 80% of revenue, 20% of bugs cause 80% of software crashes, and 20% of your daily tasks produce 80% of your meaningful results. Tim Ferriss popularized this concept in productivity circles, demonstrating how focused effort on high-impact activities can dramatically outperform traditional time management approaches. The recursive application of the 80-20 rule reveals even more powerful insights. When applied twice, it becomes the 64-4 rule, meaning just 4% of your effort can produce 64% of your results. Take this to its logical conclusion, and you arrive at the 51 rule. A mere 1% of your activities generate half of your value. This isn't just theoretical. It's observable in successful businesses where a single product line often generates the majority of profits. James Altucher's personal experience validates this principle. Analyzing his income streams, he discovered that passive investments, particularly in technology startups, generated most of his wealth while requiring minimal time investment. His involvement with Buddy Media, which sold to Salesforce for $800 million, exemplified this approach. He systematically eliminated time-consuming activities like board meetings, which averaged 4 hours each, weekly consulting calls, 2 to 3 hours per client, and television appearances, full-day commitments including travel, that provided minimal returns. This strategic elimination of low-value activities created space for passion projects. Altucher redirected his energy to writing, publishing 20 books, and podcasting, reaching millions of listeners, activities that aligned with his interests while maintaining his income through selective investments. The transformation required meticulous tracking of time allocation, income sources, and satisfaction levels. He implemented a simple system, recording daily activities in 30-minute blocks and assigning each a value score based on financial return and personal fulfillment. To apply the 51 rule effectively, focus on 3 key steps. Measure your activity's actual impact, not just time spent, ruthlessly eliminate tasks that don't contribute significant value, and reinvest in high-leverage opportunities. This might mean automating routine tasks, delegating lower-value work, or completely abandoning projects that don't align with your core value-generating activities. Success requires both the courage to eliminate familiar but ineffective patterns and the discipline to focus on truly impactful work. The spoke and wheel method represents a sophisticated approach to monetizing creative work by developing multiple interconnected revenue streams. At its core lies your primary expertise or content, the wheel, with various monetization channels extending outward like spokes, each reinforcing and amplifying the others. Using investing content as an example, spokes can include blogs, syndicated across platforms like Medium, Substack, and personal websites, social media channels, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, TikTok, and podcasts, monetized through multiple avenues like ads, sponsors, Patreon subscriptions, and affiliate marketing. Additional spokes might include curated email lists, comprehensive online courses, premium newsletters, exclusive membership communities, branded merchandise, published books, television appearances, speaking engagements, one-on-one consulting, and coaching programs. Marie Kondo's empire perfectly illustrates this strategy's potential. Her KonMari method of organizing serves as the central wheel, while she's built numerous profitable spokes. Best-selling books translated into 40-plus languages, a hit Netflix series, Tidying Up with Marie Kondo, branded organizing products, certified consultant training programs generating over $30 million, international speaking tours, and mobile apps. Each spoke reinforces her brand while targeting different customer segments and price points. Walt Disney's historical example provides another compelling case study. When his animation studio faced financial difficulties in the 1930s, the introduction of Mickey Mouse merchandise, particularly watches, proved transformative. The watches, produced in partnership with Ingersoll Waterbury, sold over 1 million units in 1934 at $1.50 each, effectively turning Disney from a struggling animation company into America's largest watch manufacturer. This success laid the groundwork for Disney's modern merchandise empire. The spoke and wheel approach offers several strategic advantages. First, it provides income diversification, protecting against market fluctuations or platform changes. For instance, if social media algorithm changes reduce ad revenue, income from courses or consulting can help maintain stability. Second, it allows creators to reach audiences with different preferences and purchasing behaviors. Some may prefer reading books, while others learn better through video content or live workshops. Third, it creates multiple entry points for new audiences, with each spoke potentially leading customers to explore other offerings. This strategy proves particularly valuable during economic uncertainty or industry disruption. When one revenue stream faces challenges, others can sustain the business while new opportunities are developed. For example, during the COVID-19 pandemic, many speakers and consultants quickly pivoted to virtual events and online courses when in-person engagements became impossible, demonstrating the model's adaptability. Being resilient means bouncing back after failure, but being anti-fragile means actually growing stronger from adversity. After going broke multiple times, Altucher initially demonstrated fragility, becoming depressed and unable to recover. Later, he developed resilience by bouncing back, but still made the same mistakes repeatedly. True anti-fragility came only when he embraced vulnerability, openly sharing his failures and extracting lessons from them. Having skin in the game means having something to lose, which forces genuine expertise rather than consequence-free opinions. A journalist who predicts an earthquake faces no penalty if wrong, but if required to bet money on every prediction, they'd research more thoroughly or remain silent. True expertise isn't built through certificates, but through direct experience with real consequences. For every major decision, ask what you stand to lose: money, reputation, or time. This natural accountability mechanism drives you to reduce risk as much as possible. While living with uncertainty is unavoidable when skipping the line, doing what nobody has attempted, taking on perceived risk leads to the greatest rewards because having skin in the game motivates you to privately minimize that risk through diligent preparation. The key to anti-fragility is identifying where you're vulnerable to catastrophic failure and deliberately exposing yourself to small doses of that risk, like a vaccine, to build strength against it. This approach helped Altucher evolve from fragile, avoiding risk, to resilient, recovering but repeating mistakes, to truly anti-fragile, using setbacks to grow stronger. In a world of increasing uncertainty and rapid change, anti-fragility isn't just a nice-to-have quality, it's essential for survival and success. By embracing uncertainty, conducting experiments, borrowing hours, mastering micro-skills, and applying the plus-minus-equals formula, you can skip the line in any field while building a life that doesn't just withstand shocks, but thrives because of them.